Welcome to episode 73 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. Why go multicellular? Bacteria are enormously successful. They're not even eukaryotes, they're prokaryotes. But there are many more bacteria than multicelled creatures. Many more individuals. And if you take the weight of all multicellular creatures and compare it to the weight of all bacteria, we're outweighed. So why go multicellular? Especially since, as an individual cell, if you are in a multicellular creature, it may not be the best place for you. Let's take a look at a critter called Salpingoca rosetta, which I'm almost certainly mispronouncing, and we'll call S. rosetta for short. It can live either as a single-celled creature or in a multicellular colonial form. In the colonial form, some of the cells are involved in causing the colony to swim through the water. Other cells are more passive. Every cell has to expend a little extra effort. They have to grow various compounds that connect the cells together. But especially for the cells involved in locomotion, they're getting kind of a raw deal. Under the right conditions, there are enough advantages to the colonial form to outweigh the disadvantages for an individual cell. You, as an individual cell, might have to expend more than your fair share of energy or even die for the sake of the colony. But your genetic line will continue. Sometimes environmental conditions change. For creatures like S. rosetta, you have the option of returning to the single-celled lifestyle. But for many species, that's not true. They've lost the ability to do so. Why? Even in animals that have been multicellular for a very long time, such as mammals, or even go a little further down the chain, you get to humans, occasionally individual cells or groups of cells will start to grow at the expense of the overall creature. For example, various kinds of cancer. This kills the host creature. Though for humans, we've developed an adaptation we call medicine that sometimes allows the host creature to live. But even then, the cancerous cells have to be removed, have to be killed off or surgically taken out. Once the host creature dies, so does the cancer. The cancer cells themselves, if taken out of the body, have a very poor chance of survival on their own. There have been cancers removed from various patients, kept in cultures that have lived for a very long time. In fact, they seem to be technically immortal. But they have very few defenses, or pretty much, functionally, no defenses when faced with the big bad bacterial world. And they are easy prey. Food for everything that lives on that scale. It's a ratchet mechanism. A ratchet being a device that allows movement in only one direction. Once cells have spent a long time in a multicellular form, they may no longer be able to survive on their own. In the previous episode, we talked about an experiment where yeast formed into snowballs, a colonial organism with a little bit of cellular specialization in the form of programmed cell death. It seems that in this case, unlike S. rosetta, there's already been a ratchet effect. When they took snowball colonies of yeast and cultured them without selecting for gravitational settling speed, they still stayed within the snowball form. That remained true even when they cultured them for as long as the snowball form took to arise in the first place. Even when they teased apart some of the snowballs and took individual cells and cultured those individual cells didn't return to the unicellular lifestyle. They all formed new snowballs. It seems to be stuck in a multicellular form already, unlike S. rosetta. Whatever other evolution might take place on the snowball yeast would have to involve the entire multicellular form. I'd be curious to know whether or not the ability to live as individual yeast cells is dormant within the snowball yeast, or if it's been trimmed off of the genetic information entirely. But that's something that lies outside of the scope of the paper I read and provided a link to on that show page. Speaking of show pages and links to articles, I have links to a couple of articles for this show page, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com. One of them describes work by a biologist named Nicole King of the University of California in Berkeley. She was studying a class of animals, not quite animals, actually protists, but closely related to animals without actually being animals. This particular class of protists are called chonoflagellates. S. rosetta is just one species of them. She was trying to get S. rosetta cells to form colonies, but was having a little trouble getting them to do so consistently. Then one of her students added some antibiotics to some of the cultures. This was in preparation for doing some gene sequencing on the S. rosetta cells. To their surprise, the S. rosetta started to form colonies. They examined this happy accident and they found that the antibiotic the student had used was preferentially killing a particular strain of bacteria. Another strain, less susceptible to the antibiotic and in competition with the bacteria strain that had died out, turns out to be food for S. rosetta colonies. In fact, when that bacterial strain starts producing a compound and reaches a large enough concentration, the S. rosetta cells detect that. This is apparently a trigger that lets S. rosetta decide that the colonial form will be advantageous. That article goes on to talk about the intimate link between bacteria and multicellular forms. Towards the end of it, it sort of casually mentions that other work has suggested that bacteria are necessary for the formation of certain organs within squid, for the organization of the guts within zebrafish and mice, and perhaps even mammalian brains. This is interesting. I had never heard of this before, and I haven't had time to look into it yet. Give me a little while, and I may come back and make an episode or two about this. Seems like something that Darwin never thought of. Next time, something else Darwin never thought of, and something that deserves its own episode. The horizontal transfer of genetic information. I'll see you then.